Hey friends, I hope you are all staying as safe and healthy and comfortable as possible, and that you're taking care of all the people and pets and plants that are important to you. Let me ask you a question, dear listener. Do you journal? I used to maintain a daily blog anonymously, and I kept that up for years before Twitter came along. But other than posting on social media and notating random thoughts in my phone, these days I don't journal, neither digitally nor physically. 2 weeks ago, I was talking with my daughter, and she suggested I start journaling, and I told her that while I didn't know if it would be something I could make time for every day, I would definitely try. Well, wouldn't you know it, my good friend Thomas Austin, who's been a guest on this show more than a couple times, both in person and via the phone, just last week mailed me a gift as a way of saying congratulations for starting a new job. And I opened the package after work one day last week, and my daughter was in the kitchen with me when I opened it. And would you believe, Thomas mailed me a beautiful black journal and a very cool pen. And he inscribed the first page with these words. Dear Andy, keep believing in yourself. Your unique voice and perspective have the power to make a difference in the world. Here's to new beginnings, endless possibilities, and the joy of creating something remarkable. Your friend, Thomas Austin. So sweet, right? A journal! How did Thomas know? Well, now I'm definitely going to start journaling. If my daughter recommending I start journaling is followed by a friend who lives in another part of the country mailing me a journal the very next week, if that's not a sign the universe is trying to tell me to start journaling, I don't know what is. Folks, while I don't regularly journal, I do write, edit, and self-publish a novel every year. And although there are no ads on this podcast and there is no Patreon set up for it, you can help support myself and this show monetarily by purchasing any or all of my books. I'm the author of 11 standalone stories that are all currently available worldwide in both ebook and paperback formats via Amazon. And if you don't use Amazon, you can find and buy all of my titles in ebook format at Google Play. Just search my last name, which is spelled M-A-S-C-O-L-A. That's how you'll find me on Google Play. If you've already purchased any or all of my books, thank you, thank you, thank you. I sincerely appreciate your generous patronage. And with all that out of the way, here's the quirky theme song. Hello, sir. I'm from Nashua, New Hampshire. Where are you from?
See, I come from Boston.
Oh.
I'm going to tell you all about how I love New England. It's
okay.
My favorite place.
Tell me about it.
You know, I've been all around the world.
You don't
but
say.
I love New England best. I might be prejudiced,
mm-hmm.
but it's true. I love New England best.
Okay.
Well,
you need a tissue?
Well, now, I'll give you the maestro.
Sound a little stuffy.
That's pretty good. Give me another one, though. Without
all right.
You.
How's that?
Hello?
Yes?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yes?
I've already been to Paris, already been to Rome.
Di-di-di-dum-di-dum-di-dum-di-dum-di-dum-day.
And what did I do but miss my home?
Oh, New England.
I have been out west
yeah.
to California. But I miss the land where I was born. I can't help it.
For those who don't know, that is the great Jonathan Richman. With the song New England. So, so good. Love Jonathan Richman. Love the Modern Lovers. Got to see Jonathan Richman a few years back when I covered Solid Sound Fest in South Adams, Massachusetts. That's Wilco's annual music festival, music and art festival. And Jonathan performed there. Oh my gosh. I know I talked about it on this program. He came out on the stage, stood at the very edge of the stage when they were getting things ready for him. And I don't know why they needed to get anything ready for him, because he wasn't plugged in at all. Like, no microphone. Didn't want one. It was outdoors. And he said, "This is going to be a moment before we start performing, and I'd like to sing you this song just to tie you over." And he sang this beautiful ballad in Italian. And it was just gorgeous, you know. And then his buddy came out. I forget his buddy's name, but he had like a bongo drum or something. And Jonathan came out. I don't even think Jonathan had, like, I think he had an acoustic guitar, if I remember correctly. And I don't even think there was a strap on it. I think he just held it under his arm. It was like as much as he could do to keep it like completely low tech, as if it was an absolute folk experience. That was the goal. So he stood on the edge of the stage with his fellow playing a bongo again. Nothing plugged in, no wires, no electronics. The most modern thing in that set was the bongo player's sunglasses, probably. Even like Jonathan's outfit looked like it was just, you know, it was probably taken from some troubadour he'd seen on the side of the road or something. But yeah, he played this incredible set of music, talked to the audience. I was crying, literally crying, just tears of happiness. Oh my gosh. What an amazing performer. Are we lucky to have Jonathan Richman? Holy smokes. I love that guy. I know Sharpling gives him a hard time about his childlike songs. I don't know if he's kidding. I know Sharpling respects him and loves the modern lovers the same way we all do, right? And when he talks about the I'm a Little Dinosaur song, Sharpling does, he kind of gives Richman the business a little bit. I love that stuff. I think that's fun. I get it, man. Think about these bands like, you know, Beat Happening. Who else? Billy Childish, I suppose. You know, that whole kind of like amateurish style. It's wonderful. You know, obviously Calvin Johnson from Beat Happening and K Records. Calvin's label. Huge proponents of that. Keepers of the indie flame. So important. Want to hear a little story? This is something that happened this past week. Or maybe it happened 2 weeks ago. Last week we had Anna Biller on the show. So I've been keeping notes on what I've been up to in the interim. And I've been dying to speak with you. Good to speak with you. I saw, while walking the dog, because I'm always out walking the dog and notating things, noticing this and that, Polaroids on the street. Yeah. One of the Polaroids. I didn't touch them. I'm that guy. I will not touch anything on the street. I'm so afraid of what, you know, what falls on the street and why. I used to pick things up off the street, CDs, DVDs especially, you know. You wonder why these things get thrown out of cars. I found like a little flip CD EP, or maybe it was a single. I wonder what happened to Little Flip, some rapper, Little Flip. I think I found like a Spider-Man DVD too once. And then I saw like a Metallica compilation, but it was like a homemade one. Like CDR, and somebody put like my favorite Metallica songs like written on it in marker. I love that stuff. You wonder why this has been thrown out of a car. But I did not see CDs or DVDs on the street the other week, but I did see Polaroids. Yeah. There's a throwback, right? You think CDs are throwbacks. In the age of streaming audio. Polaroids, holy smoke-a-rollies. Holy smoke-a-rollies, what does that mean? Where did that come from? Yeah, man, Polaroids on the street. And there were two Polaroids. I saw one, and again, I'm walking the dog, and of course you can recognize a Polaroid on the street. It's got a very distinct frame. And one was an older guy, one of the Polaroids, and because I took a close look at it, again, did not touch it. The Polaroid in the photo was an older guy sitting in a chair in profile. Kind of boring, right? Then I walked on a little bit. Maybe, you know, you know, 7 or 8 feet. And there was another Polaroid. And the other Polaroid was of a birdhouse on a tree in the woods. That might have been even more boring than the older guy sitting in a chair. And then a few feet from that second Polaroid was a pancake. For real. I was like, what? Polaroid, Polaroid, pancake. You say preventive? I've been saying preventative. Do those two words mean the same thing? Preventive and preventative? Curious. What else happened? Oh, my dog took a dump right in front of another dog who was behind a door. That was pretty funny. I was taking Lola for a walk the other day. This was just the other day. And we walked by this house where the inside door was open. And the dog was standing in the doorway. And it was overcast. Late afternoon. So we could see this boxer. And I knew this boxer. This is Casanova. That's the dog's name, for real. I saw Casanova in his house, standing at the door, looking out this glass window, waiting to go outside, waiting for his owner to come and take him outside. And Lola walked right up on the lawn, because I've got her on a 16-foot leash, looks Casanova right in the eyes, and drops a deuce right in front of him. I was like, yo. And Casanova's just like looking, like you could tell, like he was dying to get out there, you know. And Lola takes a dump right in front of Casanova, and then what does she do? She does this weird little dance. She starts like jumping, like from left to right, kind of like the Let's Play, you know, that dogs do. And Casanova's looking like, he looked, I couldn't tell if he was fascinated or furious. So then, of course, you know, I clean up after my dog. I pulled out a plastic bag. I went up and I picked up the droppings, so to speak. And Casanova went ape-ass at that point. He started barking like crazy. And then I turned the bag inside out and tied it up. Walked away with Lola. And I look back and I see the owners outside with Casanova pointing at me as I throw out the droppings in one of their neighbor's garbage cans. Is that a no-no? Is that a no-no? Tisk, tisk. Wasn't there like a whole Curb Your Enthusiasm episode about like Larry throwing his trash in somebody else's can and the neighbor taking offense to it? I do it every day. If the trash can's outside, I figure, what harm, right? Would you rather I just leave it on the lawn? Come on, now. And I'm not going to, like, carry it. I walk the dog for an hour, you know? If the dog takes a crap, you know, 20 minutes into the walk, I'm not going to walk around holding this bag of dog dew for another 40 minutes. Come on, man. Or come on, Mon, whatever you prefer. Speaking of that, do eye doctors call pupils pupes for short? You know, just to each other. Like, yeah, so I'm looking at this guy's pupes. His pupes were all messed up. That's the way eye doctors talk, by the way. They sound completely uneducated. No, kidding. Did you dilate his pupes? Yeah, I dilated his pupes. I wanted to, I had another story. This is so embarrassing. I wanted to tell you about this. I take Lola to this dog park, right? Another dog story. Sorry. If you hate dog stories, I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you. And, I noticed, like, boy, I always get here, you know, during the week, and especially when I was out of work, when I was in between jobs, I'd bring Lola to the dog park on a nice day, around 11, you know, 11, 12 in the afternoon. And Lola would have a blast. There'd always be a ton of dogs there. And 2 o'clock, everybody leaves. Everybody's like, everybody's gone. I'm like, what is happening at 2 o'clock? This happens every time I come during the week. At 2 p.m., everybody splits. And listeners, you're probably thinking like, oh, it's because people are probably picking their kids up for school. And you're absolutely right. That's exactly what it is. And why I couldn't put that together myself is beyond me. Somebody had to tell me. I said, I was telling another dog owner, I said, yeah, I always take her to the park, but you know what? At 2 p.m., everybody leaves. The guy said, yeah, it's because, you know, the people have to pick up their kids from school. I was like, oh, yeah, I guess I should have thought of that, yeah. It's been a while since I've had to do that. But of course, yeah. Okay, didn't have a lot for you. It's been some time, still, haven't collected a lot of material, but I do have a clip for you that I wanted to play, but before we can play the clip, let's hear the theme song. I hope I have this turned up. Okay, good. Let's hear the clip music theme song now. Now. No? Now. Whenever there's trouble, we're there on the double. We're the bloodhound gang. If you've got the crime, we've got the time. We're the bloodhound gang. Thank you, bloodhound gang. Okay. I'm going to cue this one up for you here. This is a guy, comedian named Alex Edelman. I don't know anything about Alex Edelman other than I found a clip of him on TikTok of him doing stand-up, and I thought it was kind of fun. And I guess we're sticking with the New England theme here because Alex Edelman is a New Englander. Again, don't know anything about his stand-up, don't know anything about who he is as a comic, but I did like this bit, and I said, oh, I should play that for the folks on the show, and I did edit it, because there are children listening. But I think you'll be able to figure it out. Check this out. This is Alex Edelman.
If anyone ever asks you a question and you know they want a specific answer from you, but you're not sure what that answer is, there are four words that will save you every single time. Sir, sorry to bother you. Would you mind asking me if I saw the game last night?
Did you see the game last night?
Oh, can you believe it? This works. It's amazing. Can you believe it? It means people's three favorite things in a conversation. It means I know what you're talking about, I agree with you, and most importantly, you talk. It works every single time. By the way, I'm from New England. There is a New England version of this. If you ever caught in a stalled conversation with a New Englander, just go fucking Brady, right? It works every single time.
I hope you heard that. Obviously, he said effing Brady, right? So true. So true! Alex Edelman. Folks, that's about all I've got for you today. Thank you so much for checking out the show. I am now going to hand things off to our friend, Rachel from Des Moines. And she is going to give you the chart chat. So, without any further ado, take it away, Rachel.
Thanks, Andy. Hello, and welcome back to Rachel's Chart Chat for another week. Thanks to everyone who listened last week. I got some nice comments from Sherry, Tavy, who shared a clip of Alan Rickman singing The Sun Ain't Gonna Shine Anymore from the movie Truly Madly Deeply, Jill, Jeffrey, who played some of the bands featured on his VJ Big Suit Twitch show, Tom on Blue Sky, and Dennis, who told me about a rock anthology he enjoyed reading back in the day with similar Big in UK, Ignored in US, and vice versa lists, examples being The Jam and Styx. I'm sure you can figure out which is which. For this week, I truly had no good car ideas, so we're back to reading a chapter from DeLillo and Woods' I Wanna Be Sedated from 1993, even though no one got me the rights as a gift. I chose the last chapter in the book, and it's about Cheap Trick. There are a couple references in the text to Ronco, which the authors devote an earlier chapter to, and I wanted to make sure you had the proper context. Among their many as-seen-on-TV wonders like the Vegematic, the Popeil Pocket Fisherman, or the Showtime Rotisserie, Ronco also had a record label, releasing compilation albums to be sold on TV and ordered by phone. But now that's what I call music of its day. K-Tel Records was another such record label in the 70s. Escape, the Pina Colada chapter. I saw Rick Wakeman playing in the States. Terrific. He was pushing a Mellotron over an ice rink on skates trying to catch it. That's art. Rick Nielsen, 1979. And that's it, fellow travelers. Time to close the book on these, the best years of our lives. In saying goodbye to the 1970s, there's nobody better equipped to deliver the eulogy than Cheap Trick, the premier bubble punk, power pop, disco metal, new wave, ronco trash hype machine crazies of the decade. The Cheap Trick story began in the early 1960s when local thugs Rick Nielsen and Tom Peterson were busy doing the Louie Louie thing with various high school bands in the great American Midwest. It's important to remember these formative years when tracing Cheap Trick's evolution, because time literally stopped for Rick and Tom in a couple of ways. One, the arrivals of the Beatles on U.S. shores had a lasting influence on everything Cheap Trick would eventually record. And two, Rick was so in love with his period costume of beanie, bow tie, and varsity sweater, not even Gilbert O'Sullivan looked as collegiate as Ricky, he never again bought new clothes. It wasn't until 1968 that Rick and Tom finally got an album out as part of the band Fuse. When the LP failed to sell the 45 copies needed to break even, Fuse defused pronto. The next few years saw Rick and Tom hop back and forth between the United States and Europe, trying to get a band together that would build upon the Fuse legend. In Germany, Bun E. Carlos, a seedy-looking character who used to pound horsehide in Sha-Na-Na-type revival shows, entered the picture. It was a touching and historic meeting. Bun E. took one look at Rick, Rick took one look at Bun E., and they both suddenly felt a whole lot better about themselves. Giddy with excitement, the three men waved down the first cab they saw marked Airport, made the driver turn back when they realized they still needed a singer, picked up Robin Zander, another American expatriate, along the roadside, and, in 1974, set out for a triumphant homecoming. It's a long, long way to Budokan, though, so for the next couple years, the newly christened Cheap Trick traipsed around the USA playing upwards of 250 shows a year. Curious souls who ventured out for a look-see must not have known what to make of the band. Too chirpy to be metal, too self-deprecating to be arty, too fast to lewd out to, too mischievous to trust, too quintessentially 70s to give a second thought to. Making matters even more confusing was the ascension of punk and disco in the mid-70s, which, when combined with the proliferation of ronco junk on the top 40 airwaves, created a climate that left shell-shocked pop fans without any emotional compass whatsoever. The time was exactly right for a group of semi-lovable Nerf munchkins to step forward and make sense of it all. If Dr. Hook or the Wombles couldn't do it, then maybe, just maybe, Cheap Trick could. Cheap Trick, their first LP released early in 1977, was a good start in that direction. There were musical jokes and puns all over the place, snappy peons to mass murder, pedophilia, suicide, and other popular American hobbies, and best of all, there was He's a Whore, the most gleefully malevolent, we're only in it for the money confession of a decade with no shortage of them. He's a Whore was enough to land Cheap Trick an opening spot on the next Kiss tour. Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons were so dismayed by such blatantly mercenary sentiments, they offered to take the upstart band under their wing and teach them the finer, more thoughtful path to rock and roll enlightenment. Cheap Trick took their momentum from the Kiss tour and pumped it into In Color, their second LP released later that year. Clearly, here was a schizophrenic band for a schizophrenic time, one that had absorbed and mastered every stray chunk of refuse off the 70s scrap heap. Traces of The Move, Todd Rundgren, The Raspberries, Early Sweet, middle period Partridge Family, side one of K-Tel's 20 Dynamite Hits, certain Uriah Heep albums of ill repute, anything and everything with melody and guitars and the overwhelming stamp of abject insignificance. The LP was highlighted by I Want You to Want Me, which combined the unstoppable surge of First Class's Beach Baby, the hardcore wussiness of Climax's Precious and Few, and a swelling crescendo of Downed, Southern Girls, and Come On, Come On were pretty fabulous too. While Hello There tossed out a metaphysical challenge that would henceforth jumpstart every Cheap Trick concert. The question was repeated about 39 times, just so you had plenty of time to think up an answer. Meanwhile, Cheap Trick's unique visual presentation was winning new converts daily. Robin and Tom blew kisses to the Andy Gibb / Tiger Beat set, Bun E. perennially looked as if he'd just snuck out of a porno theater, and Rick careened around concert stages like a crazed Pee Wee Herman forerunner. In 1978, the band released Heaven Tonight, a mixed collection that was kicked off by Surrender, the first Cheap Trick single to chart. Number 62, Bee Gees, Here We Come. It is here that we finally reach the end of the 70s rainbow, complete our journey downstream to capture Mr. Kurtz, draw the curtain on the wizard once and for all, bow our heads humbly to the decade's holy grail, unlock the meaning of existence. We're running out of ill-advised metaphor, but you get the idea. Surrender was nothing less than miraculous, a mixed-up generational dialogue, at once mysterious, celebratory, funny, humane, kinetic, roaring, able to say something profound without in any way trying to be profound, full of wisdom, affection, incredulity, and acceptance. It traveled from an army base in the Philippines to a living room in Illinois, where it ended with a single image that encapsulated a time, a place, and an entire whacked-out generation. A typical 70s glitter kid wakes up one night to find his parents orgying merrily to the romantic strains of his Kiss records. What was one supposed to do when confronted by such madness? Surrender, obviously. Being a pop fan in the 1970s was a sustained act of day by day, year by year, outrage by outrage, gimmick by gimmick, improbability by improbability, surrender. It was a lost cause, war of attrition, and ultimately it led to a fan's acceptance that even though the music could be as transporting as ever, Surrender was proof of that, not to mention Rock and Roll All Night, I Feel Love, Yo-Yo, Get Down Tonight, and 100 other unfathomable 70s masterpieces. Only a lunatic could still believe that pop music's best days were ahead, the way one might have as the decade began. And that's where Cheap Trick's affection came in to elevate Surrender way beyond cynicism. Keep something back for yourself anyway, it advised, because one day we'll look back and discover we were all right. Maybe we'll even feel nostalgic for the whole silly mess. Surrender marked Cheap Trick as the truest of all 70s heroes, but in order to make it official, they still had to attend to two things. One, release a live album, and two, become totally irrelevant by 1980. First up was Cheap Trick at Budokan, 1979, which transformed One Nation's worship into 40 minutes of bang-up Godzilla ambience, lots of crash-boom-womp, 20,000 Japanese teenagers screaming for mercy, an ungodly-looking creature surveying the scene from above, Rick or Bunny, take your pick, and a nifty soundtrack to heighten the tension, made up of old favorites, a good new song called Lookout, and a great version of Surrender. Budokan was still high on the charts when Dream Police, 1979, came out, an album with all the signs of a band whose moment had passed. The title song was Vintage Cheap Trick, but most of the rest was either ho-hum, tired, or outright inept, and the group was more or less a dead fish from that day forward. Tom left in 1980, and though the others carried on and rallied for a couple of late 80s hits, it was difficult to reconcile the new Cheap Trick with the one responsible for He's a Whore, Hello There, Surrender, and the rest. All that really remained from the glory days was Rick's uncanny influence as an arbiter of fashion, as teenagers everywhere began wearing baseball caps marked with the letter X, Rick's favorite algebraic symbol in the early 90s. Can bow ties be far behind? Good night now, ladies and gentlemen. That's the end of the show. Now it's time to go. For a little bit of context, Cheap Trick had five charting singles in 78 and 79, all but one hitting the top 40, and I Want You to Want Me live hitting number 7. They had 9 charting singles in the 80s, including a number 1 hit, The Flame, and a number 4, Don't Be Cruel, both in 1988, from the album Lap of Luxury, which Tom Petersen actually returned for. They had a top 40 hit as late as 1990. They had a bit of a comeback in the late 90s, with a box set, the 20th anniversary of their At Budokan live album, which was the complete concert this time, and they did the That 70s Show theme from season 2 onwards. On the top 200 albums chart, every studio album since their second, 1977's In Color, has charted, save a Christmas release in 2017. The original At Budokan from 79 was their highest charting album, with hitting a peak of number 4. It spent 53 weeks on the top 200 album chart and went triple platinum. That's all from me this week. Thanks so much for listening. Back to you, Andy.
Thank you, Rachel. As always, awesome stuff. This has been episode 325 of the People Are the Enemy podcast. Our theme song is Walrus Love by Nokia Ocean. You can find that song and more at pizzapuppies.bandcamp.com. My name is Andy Mascola. You can purchase my novels via Amazon and other online book retailers in both paperback and ebook formats for as little as $1.99. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you, Rachel from Des Moines. We love you. Peace.